those words into action. Children killed in the early hours of the morning? Among the 7 children killed in Gaza recently were 4-year-old Hajar al-Bahtini and Ali, and Mayar Ezzeddin, aged 8 and 12. U.S.-sourced warplanes were used to bomb their homes. Other children were orphaned. The dentist and hospital administrator Jamal Khaswan and his wife Mervat were killed, along with one of their sons. They leave behind 4 other children. To the Zionist regime, the children it killed were just collateral damage of its military onslaught, grotesquely named Operation Shield and Arrow. To justify the dehumanization of Palestinian children, Maurice Hirsch, who spent almost 2 decades in the Zionist regime's military advocate general corps, tweeted that while the incidental loss of life of non-combatants is always unfortunate, the laws of war take into account that this is a possible and even legitimate result. And in much worse tweet, he goes further, considering the military advantage gained by eliminating these senior terrorists, it is irrelevant to ask how many children were incidentally killed. Hirsch's words encapsulate the Zionist ideology. Under the Zionist regime's genocidal, settler, colonial doctrine, the lives of the natives are irrelevant. Natives have to be eliminated so that white European colonizers, in this case Jewish supremacists, can flourish. According to the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights, everyone has the right to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of himself and of his family, including food, clothing, housing, and medical care, and necessary social services, and the right to security in the event of unemployment, sickness, disability, widowhood, old age, or other lack of livelihood in circumstances beyond his control. Apparently, that right does not apply to the Palestinians. Such is the cruel logic of settler colonialism of the fabricated regime of Israel. Meanwhile, Arab News reported the Zionist regime security forces arrest about 1,000 Palestinian children from the streets, schools, and homes of the West Bank each year, and about the same number from East Al-Quds on suspicion of involvement in attacks or protest. Children's rights organizations say such practices are abusive and harm youngsters' physical and mental health. They are prohibited by international laws and agreements related to the children's rights, to which the Zionist regime is a signatory. According to the organizations, the Zionist regime's practices against Palestinian children include arresting them in the dead of night, arresting them without a court order and without explanation, handcuffing and blindfolding them, preventing their parents, family members, or lawyers from accompanying them, and subjecting them to beatings and insults. The bodies say that children are exposed to physical pain and psychological pressure and go through experiences of loneliness, intense fear, confusion, humiliation, helplessness, and sometimes a sense of danger of death. They add that many children report severe post-traumatic symptoms following their release. Jessica Montel, executive director at Israel-based human rights organization Ha Moked, told Arab News, Israel ignores its legal obligation to consider the child's best interest when it comes to Palestinian children wanted for interrogation. Traumatic night arrest remained the default method for bringing in Palestinian children. Hamoked has petitioned the Israeli High Court against this practice. "We are demanding the Israeli military send a summons to parents when children are wanted for questioning." Adura Fares, director of the Palestinian Prisoners Club, told Arab News that the Zionist regime's military authorities 5 years ago introduced amendments to the law of military occupation in the West Bank and the civilian law in East al-Quds to allow the arrest and trial of children aged 12 and upwards. Fares added that a series of alternative punishments have been adopted in East al-Quds, such as fines, release on bail or house arrest, a 1 or 2 month in which the child's family deposits $6,000 with the court, and the amount is confiscated if the child leaves his home during the period of house arrest. Fares said house arrest for children is more difficult than ordinary imprisonment, as this method makes parents jailers for their children so they do not lose the money. Many children who are detained at home hate their parents, who have to ensure they remain imprisoned in the house until the end of the sentence, he said. A total of 160 Palestinian children are currently serving sentences in the Zionist regime prisons after being arrested for joining protests, raising the Palestinian flag, or throwing stones. An Israeli settler shot dead a Palestinian recently. Ala Ghaysiyeh, 28, was killed in the settlement of Tana Umrim in Az-Zihriya, southwest of Al-Khalil. The shooting brought the number of Palestinians killed by the Zionist regime occupation forces and settlers since the beginning of the year to 157, including 36 in Gaza during May. The total includes 26 children. 4 Palestinians were wounded by live bullets during clashes with the Zionist regime military forces, while settlers burnt 5 vehicles and 270 bales of straw between the villages of Tor Musaya and Al-Mughaber, east of Ramallah. The Zionist regime army has begun arresting members of the Popular Front for Liberation of Palestine. The Zionist regime intelligence officers are texting PFLP members, warning them not to participate in activities of the organization. A former prisoner and member of the PFLP confirmed to Arab News that he had received a message adding that warnings had recently increased from the Zionist regime's intelligence agency, Shin Bet. It has been reported that more than 100 Palestinians affiliated with PFLP have been arrested in recent weeks.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser are helping me criticize the movie Predestination that we started to criticize from the last two episodes ago onward. Sayyid Abdullah, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi, and thank you for having me.
Welcome. And Brother Yasser, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the program.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Always a pleasure to be with you, Brother Muhammad Jawad.
The pleasure is always ours. Let's take a listen to a short part of the movie Predestination, produced in 2014, directed by Michael and Peter Spirek, featuring stars such as Ethan Hawke, Noah Taylor, Sarah Snow, Eliza Jansen, just to name a few. And then we'll be back with his criticism after the break. Don't go away.
Do I have a choice?
Of course, you always have a choice.
Yeah, but sometimes don't you think that things are just inevitable?
Yes, the thought has crossed my mind.
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio. We are criticizing the movie Predestination, produced in 2014, directed by Michael and Peter Spirek. Brother Yasser, let me start with you this time. And inshallah, hopefully we end the critique of this movie in this episode. In one part of the movie, Sarah Snow asks Ethan Hawke, "Do I have a choice?" This is, a recurrent theme in this movie, especially in relation to its title, Predestination. So do I have a choice? Before embarking on the mission, for example, killing the Fizzle bomber attack in New York, before he became a terrorist, I have two questions for you. Number one, do we have free will? Or it's just all based on predestination? And number two, is it ethical or legal to punish somebody before wrongdoing? Of course, on condition that time machine exists, enabling us to travel through time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I mean, the question that you asked has been a question that has been a question for thousands of years. It's not a new question, like from the beginning of...
And it doesn't have a simple answer, I know.
It's not a simple answer, but it has an answer. That's a beauty, especially in the school of Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam.
Nice.
They have a very beautiful answer. And more so when it comes to the higher intellectual sciences.
Right.
Like, I just want to mention a beautiful story in this regard, with regards to the predestination type of one. Mm-hmm. Well, it says that once Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib, alayhi as-salam, was asked, "How do you know God exists?" And Imam replied that whenever I plan to do something or I have an intention to do something, and obviously in my own words, the Imam says that, and that thing goes wrong. Mm-hmm. I know that there's someone higher looking after me,
right,
or looking out for me, or looking at, you know, taking control of my affairs.
Yes.
So in terms of this thing, the same thing was asked to many of the Imams, and according to what we have in our teachings, because it was in Islamic theology, you had three schools. You have the Mu'tazilite school, which believed in absolute free will, or what is known as Tafwid. You had the Ash'ari school, which was the predestination, or absolute predestination, which was the Ash'ari or the Jabr.
Yes.
And then you had the Imams, alayhim as-salam.
Right.
Where came that, this famous hadith that we always say, "La Jabra wa la Tafwid, wal Amru Bainal amrain, wa illa al-amr bayna al-amrain. That there is no such thing as this absolute free will or absolute predestination. It is an affair between the two affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Muslim scholars, right up until the 7th century, were unable to escape this question. Even Islamic Shi'i scholars, they tended, yes, they accepted free will. We accept free will. But how do then kind of fit it in with this teaching of the knowledge of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala was very difficult. It's still difficult. Until a time when Islamic philosophy, and especially the philosophy that started with Mullah Sadra in the 11th century.
Right.
He proved of how this is actually that we as human beings have free will because we are attached, absolutely dependent on a being, on an existence that is entirely free, that is absolutely free.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore that has to manifest itself in us. And it's a whole, like it's a long discussion. But also there are certain things we have no control of. So it's
like birth and death.
Like birth and many other, how high am I, how... Yes, yeah. People try to control the color of my eyes if you go for surgery and so on. So we manipulate it. Better than control, the better. We manipulate it.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual understanding of this hadith of Al-Amr bayna Amrain is something that even Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, in his 40 hadith speaks about it.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned it in one paragraph and he says that the true entirety or the true understanding of this is only understood by Ahl al-Zawq. Of those true individuals who saw what this means. It's not something that you can conceptualize.
Right.
It is something you have to see it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, thank you very much, Brother Yasser, for a nice answer to this question, which is very much perplexing and mind-boggling, by the way. And let's take a break by listening to another part of the movie Predestination, produced in 2014, and then we'll be back with his critique. Don't go away.
You're here to create history and influence what is to come. I don't think I can do it. Understand, you are more than an agent. You're a gift given to the world through a predestination paradox. You're the only one free from history, ancestry.
There is there.
But you must complete your mission. You must lay the seeds for the future. We're counting on you.
And what happens when that day comes when I have no knowledge of my future?
Well, then, like everyone else, you're just going to have to take it one day at a time.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio. We are still criticizing the movie Predestination, produced in 2014, directed by Michael and Peter Spirek, featuring Ethan Hawke, Sarah Snook, and just to name a few of these actors and actresses playing a part in the movie. With Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah. Sayyid Abdullah, let me ask you this question. In one part of the movie, Mr. Robertson, the person acting as the coordinator of the bureau, basically, talks to Ethan Hawke in the movie about how he's a gift to the world, to mankind, by completing missions, and how he's free from history and ancestry, right? He can shape the future in a better way. This is the kind of justification that he comes up with in this movie, in relation to or having the time machine and travel through time. However, Ethan Hawke responds that what happens when he has no knowledge of future, probably because of losing the time machine, right? Don't you think that this world is based on a perfect system, what we call Nizam al-Ahsan, right? In that we don't know the future, obviously as a result of free will, right? Because we have many options open to us, right? And yeah. We are left with this power, with this capacity to choose as we desire, as we think fit, right? So there would be millions or even billions of options and actions in front of us, right? So we cannot exactly determine what the future is, and then that is something favorable.
Yeah. The idea is that when it comes to time travel, obviously it's just science fiction. There is not such a thing anyway.
Yeah,
it wouldn't exist in any possible scenario. But if it, because the whole movie is based on an if statement, right? If you can do such a thing, would you do it for the greater good? For example, prevent a bombing that will kill this, or kill a man that will go in a truck and, you know, kill so much people.
But, you know, Albert Einstein never rejected the idea.
Of time travel?
Yeah, time travel and creating a time machine.
Right? Yeah, I mean, he can...
In physics.
He can imagine as much as he wants.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is like a whole...
Of course, we know that the philosophical challenges...
This is a whole discussion by itself, so yeah. I don't want to go there.
Okay.
So the idea is that at the end of the day, when it comes to the future, even if one can do something to manipulate the future, it still will never turn out the way he wants it to turn out.
Mm-hmm.
It can to a smaller scale. It can prevent someone from dying. Mm-hmm. But what happens to him later, you have no idea. So he might not kill one now, but he might kill later. So the future, regardless of how you're trying to manipulate it, at the end of the day, it's never in your hand, because like you said exactly, there are millions of choices at play. Mm-hmm. And each one of them can take that, what you're seeking, into a different, completely different direction.
Exactly.
And like we have the series of movies called Predestination as well. The guys that try to avoid death.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing, they might avoid it in one way, but then they would get it somewhere else. So no matter how much he's trying to change the future, if you want to go against the plan of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, at the end of the day, you're going to collide with something else. So it's not a feasible solution.
Thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to another part of the movie Predestination, produced in 2014, directed by Michael and Peter Spider, and then we'll be back with his critique. Don't go away.
Here you are. At the beginning of your new life, it can be overwhelming knowing the future you're about to create, knowing the purpose of that life.
You know who she is, and you understand who you are, and then maybe you're ready to understand who I am.
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio with Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser. We are trying to criticize the movie Predestination, directed by Michael and Peter Spirek, producing 2014, featuring Ethan Hawke, Sarah Snook, and others. Well, Brother Yasser, let me ask you this last question, and inshallah we'll end the critique of this movie. At the end of the movie, it is revealed that all of these major characters are the same person. Mm-hmm. Quite mind-boggling and confusing. Well, apart from and despite its logical fallacies, all right, Ethan Hawke advises Sarah Snook in the movie that we can change the course of events in the future and we can influence the past, not only the future, but also the past. Is that feasible? Is that possible, first of all? And is that ethical if we are able to do so?
First of all, previously you asked the question if it is possible to punish someone before a crime.
Mm-hmm.
Simple question, no. And it's, you have to let the crime happen. And we see that in the certain historical events that we have from the Imams, alayhi salam. For example, Imam Ali alayhi salam and his own killer, he says, he is my killer.
Yeah.
So do it now.
Yeah.
He hasn't done anything. Because there are certain other philosophical, theological discussions that can happen there.
But and anyway. Also the challenges, like reflected in the movie Minority Report by Tom Cruise. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have those things. Right? So we have to wait for the crime and so on. And there was the previous question we didn't get to answer. But this one, for example, I just want to put it out there. First of all, what's happening in front with that particular person is impossible.
Right.
Why? Because it is a vicious cycle.
Mm-hmm.
As he mentions it, that my existence is based on the existence of that child going to the house.
Yeah.
So the question is, where did that child come from?
Mm-hmm.
If the child is the birth of someone in the past that went back, it shouldn't exist in the first place. It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, exactly. It has logical fallacies.
So the first one is that they shouldn't exist in the first place. There is no way, logically, philosophically, commonsensically, that this person should exist.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, about time change, if possible, that's a question like the Sayyid said, this whole movie is based on if. Mm-hmm. If it is possible for somebody to go back and change an event, one thing is that we as human beings do not have the entire picture of what will happen. We may change, and one of the things that this movie does not show is that the relationship between my action and those around me.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of the butterfly effect.
Yeah, exactly. We right? have the, that movie.
Right? A movie, and what the thing is that every single person or every single thing in this world, as you mentioned previously, of the Nizam al Ahsan, is based on this, is that any act that I do affects the Nizam.
Yeah. We also have that reflected in the movie Vantage Point.
Right.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
So this thing is this, that, okay, we see the movie in the light of one individual who goes around in a circle.
Uh-huh.
However, we are not seeing that this particular circle, for example, he goes to a certain bar, he fills drink for a certain person. That drink that he gives to that particular person, that affects that person, what that person will do later.
Yeah, there are pulling, lots of other factors involved.
Exactly. So you're not showing that.
That's play. Yeah.
Right? That's not showing that. That he, okay, so even in this case, if you are able to go back and change a particular event,
mm-hmm.
for a certain amount of people that may be good, but for a certain others, it may not be good. It may, you know, be
yeah,
bad. It might
yeah,
cause something worse.
Yeah. yeah.
In end of the day.
Yeah, thank you very much, Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, for your nice contribution to the program Viewpoint, in which we try to criticize the movie Predestination, directed by Michael and Peter Spirek, producing 2014, featuring Ethan Hawke, Noah Taylor, Sarah Snook, Eliza Jensen, to just name a few. Thank you very much for joining us and listening to this program Viewpoint on IRIB English Radio. From me and the rest of the crew, we say wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
10, 9.
I always
eight,
knew something was different about me.
6.
You're a gift given to the world through a predestination paradox. You're the only one.
You're gonna save millions of lives.
You must complete your mission. You must lay the seeds for the future.
Here you are. At the beginning of your new life.
I know where I come from. Where do all you zombies come from?
You're here to create history and influence what is to come.
Time catches up with us all.
The path you're on will take you to your destination.
Food for thought.
Salam, friends. Let us start the day with a short but sweet saying from Imam Reza, peace upon him. Refrain from using unlawfully obtained construction materials in your buildings, for these will ruin it.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Football versus enemies. Part 4.
A
after the first Persian Gulf War and the direct conflict between the U.S. and Saddam Hussein, Saddam's loyalty to the world order was over. So, U.S. was looking for a new figure to help them dominate other Arab countries in the region. Saudi Arabia clinched the opportunity. Now, Saudi Arabia had replaced Saddam, and Iranians were aware of it. The differences between Iran and Saudi Arabia widened the rifts. The tensions didn't spare football. In the mid-1990s, Iran's national team entered the Asian Championship in the United Arab Emirates with a new young combination. Iran and Saudi Arabia were in the same group. It made the event more exciting. Although Iran's national team didn't have an international star, the team's unity was its strongest point. During that event, the young Iranian players left everyone in awe. Saudi Arabia, the defender of the championship title, was given a drubbing with 3 goals by the Iranian players who were thirsty for fame. Iran was getting better results than the next matches. While it was 2-1 behind South Korea, it won the match 6-2. It was the beginning of Iran's surprise with that generation of football players. Iran had to defeat Saudi Arabia in the semi-final match to reach the final. The atmosphere of the games and the hosts of the event, namely the UAE, turned the tide in favor of Saudi Arabia. Iran was denied a penalty shootout and one of its goals was disallowed. Everything was tied to the penalty shootouts. Saudi Arabia won the match and became champion that year. Iranians' hatred against them intensified. As the reformist government in Iran took office, the preliminary stage of the 1998 World Cup was being held. Iran and Saudi Arabia were once again placed in the same group. The Iranian team had scored the highest points in games at home, but as the team couldn't concentrate on the matches due to internal differences, it was in a tough spot. Iran's entry to the World Cup hinged on its match against Qatar. Qatar was ready to do everything it could to get a result in favor of Saudi Arabia as a fellow Arab nation. When the match kicked off, we didn't see any trace of enthusiasm among the Iranians. Iran unbelievably received 2 goals. There were rumors the Iranian players had been poisoned. Saudi Arabia proceeded to the World Cup and left a wound in the hearts of Iranians. After being defeated by Japan in the playoff, Iran had to try its luck in a confrontation with Australia, even though Iran's chances for victory were next to nil. After a glorious ceremony before the match, everyone was ready for a national celebration in Australia. Iranian players were filled with stress. In those furious moments, Iran's captain Ahmadreza Abedzadeh was the only player who was feeling cool. He had done 2,500 sit-ups on the plane to make the long haul to Australia seem shorter and went onto the field on his own to do warm-up exercises in the packed stadium. When the match finally started, he was the only person who wasn't stressed. Abedzadeh once again gave the team good vibes. He did 2 somersaults and showed the team glimmers of hope. For the first time after the 1979 revolution, Iran witnessed a national unity in an emotional reaction to a football match. After the match, people packed the streets and celebrated all night long. The festivity wasn't organized, a historical and dramatic day like a movie full of suspense and conflict. After the draw in the World Cup, Iran was placed in the most political group in the World Cup. Besides the United States, there were three other countries who had a history of political tension with the U.S. The Germans hadn't forgotten the battle with the U.S. during World War II. The Yugoslavians, whose country was named Serbia and Montenegro, with the support of the Montenegrin separatists in their country, and Iran that saw the U.S. behind all crises and threats after the revolution and during the war. The World Cup was held in France, a country that hosted Iranian immigrants who held grudges against the post-revolution Iran one way or another. The supporters of the monarchy and the MKO were two major groups of immigrants in France. They saw the World Cup as the best opportunity to show their beliefs and views about Iran. The first match was against Yugoslavia. Before the match, the Yugoslavian captain sought to humiliate Iran. He said he would become the top scorer in that match. But Yugoslavian players were almost defeated against Iran. Yet Abedzadeh wasn't in Iran's goal due to injury, and it helped Yugoslavia defeat Iran. After being defeated in that match, the Iranians pinned all their hopes on the match against the U.S. In the second match, Iran had to face its arch enemy. It was a battle that had officially started on August 15, 1953. It was the first battle that Iran and the U.S. could directly face off. It seemed the two sides and their representatives were standing in front of each other. On the eve of the match, then U.S. President Bill Clinton addressed the Iranian people in a message. It greatly impacted the political aspect of the match. That evening, the state French TV was airing anti-Iran movie, Not Without My Daughter. It was an insulting movie that showed Iranian families in a bad light. In the following years, similar movies like Argo and 300 were made by Hollywood. Everything was moving in a direction, so the most political match of the late 20th century would go down in history. To take the edge off the match, FIFA made the arrangements. Both teams had one photo call instead of separate photo calls. It turned out to become one of the most controversial sports pictures in the 20th century. But things didn't end there. The MKO members had spent huge amounts of money to buy tickets for the seats in front of the cameras. They handed out free tickets and hired buses to organize trips by supporters of the terrorist cult to the stadium to stand out in the media.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Salamun Alaikum. Welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Thank you for choosing this program to listen to. Today we're going to speak about the blessings of visiting Imam Reza's Hale Shrine. Today, Friday, is the 13th of Zilqa'dah, 1444 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 12th of Khordad, 1402 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 2nd of June, 2023 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. From chapter Al-Furqan, let's listen to verses 73 to 74 and then we'll listen to its importance.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Wallazina itha dhukkiru biayati rabbihim lam yakhirru 'alayha summan wa 'umyana.
And those who, when reminded of the verses of their Lord, do not fall upon them deaf and blind.
والذين يقولون ربنا هب لنا من أزواجنا وذرياتنا قرة أعين وجعلنا للمتقين إماما.
And those who say, Our Lord, grant us from among our wives and offspring comfort to our eyes, and make us an example for the righteous.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Certainly, it is not forgotten that these verses do not state all the qualities of the believers, but they define the specialties of a choice group of them who are at the top and are entitled as the servants of the Beneficent. Yes, there are special servants of Allah, and as the general mercy of Allah includes all people, the mercy of servants of Allah is, from some aspects, general too. Their knowledge, speech, thought, power, and writing all function for guiding people to the path of the truth. In many narrations, we read that this verse is about Imam Ali, peace be upon him, and family of the Prophet and Imams, peace be upon them all.
Allahumma salli ala Ali ibn Musa al-Riza al-Murtadha. Al-Imam al-Taqi al-Nabi. وحجتك على من فوق الأرض ومن تحت الثرى الصديق الشهيد صلاة كثيرة تامة زاكية متواصلة متواترة مترادفة كأفضل ما صليت على أحد من أوليائك.
Can you remember the topics that we open from a few episodes of today's special before? There was about the blessings of Imam Reza's visiting or ziyarah. Ziyarah of the eighth Imam brings about his intercession for the believers. That is, in addition to the worldly effects, it will also have other worldly consequences. It is quoted from Imam Reza, I will intercede for any of my friends who visits my shrine and recognizes my right. The recognition of the eighth Imam's right means not to lie and not to visit his shrine with hypocrisy and greed, intending to show off. We should recognize them as some who is assigned by Allah to guide people. And we should know what difficulties the Imam has suffered is accomplishing this mission. Accordingly, the pilgrims should obey the rules of pilgrimage. Making crowds is not only mentioned in Islamic teachings, but also such behavior is denounced. Devotion, serenity, patience, and politeness have been emphasized in Ziyara.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Today we are going to talk about the blessings of Imam Radha alayhi salam and the importance of his graveyard and holy shrine. We should recognize Imam, we should know Imam as someone who is assigned by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to guide people, and we should know what difficulties the Imam had suffered from in accomplishing this mission. Accordingly, the pilgrims should obey the rules of pilgrimage. Making crowds is not only mentioned in Islamic teachings, but also such behavior is denounced. Devotion, serenity, patience, and politeness have been emphasized in ziyarah and pilgrimage of Imam alayhi salam. Undoubtedly, the presence of Imam's lovers from Iran and other countries has brought about many blessings, including the international aspects, which is indicative of the Shia's passion and devotion to the innocent, to this infallible Imam. The blessings that we are talking about are both material and spiritual. So since we have been even closer to, from the viewpoint of distance, we have been closer to Imam Radha alayhi salam, so we have sensed all these blessings even much more than others. I hope that all the brothers and sisters from all around the world find this chance and opportunity to come to Iran and visit the holy shrine of Imam Radha alayhi salam in the city of Mashhad. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala include us among the righteous and right followers of Imam Radha alayhi salam in this world and the hereafter. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Allahumma salli ala Ali ibn Musa ar-Ridha al-Murtada الإمام التقي النقي.
O Allah, send blessings upon Ali ibn Musa ar-Ridha, the contented, the spotlessly pure leader, and your authority on the face of the earth, and below it, the truthful and the martyr, perpetually abundant blessings that are pure and continue ceaselessly, the best of the blessings that you have sent upon any of your chosen ones.
About Imam Reza's character, at this point we reach to his acts of worship and reverential fear. One of the most prominent qualities of Imam Reza is his devotion to Allah the Exalted and his clinging to Him. We can clearly see this quality in his acts of worship, which represent great part of his spiritual life, standing in light, Allah-fearingness and piety. One of his companions has said, "When I saw him, Imam Reza, I mentioned these words of him, the Exalted, they used to sleep but little in the night." Imam Reza was the most Allah-fearing of the people of his time and the most obedient of them to Allah, the Most High. The Mamun sent his commander to Medina in order to bring the Imam to Khorasan. He has reported the following about his acts of worship. "By Allah, I have never seen a man more earnest than him in seeking protection in Allah, the Great and Almighty, mentioning him in all his times and fearing him. When he rose in the morning, he performed the morning prayer. When he finished his prayer, he sat in his place of prayer and began glorifying Allah, praising him, saying, 'Allah is greater. There is no God but Allah. O Allah, bless the Prophet and his family. May Allah bless him and his family.'"
Yeah.
Thank you for choosing this episode of today's special, where we speak about being a better person. Yeah, that is one way to make the most of ziyarah of Ahlul Bayt. Upon arriving back home, you will feel like a different person. Things that previously occupied your mind and heart will seem alien to you, and your experience is the homeland that you visited will be imprinted upon yourself. See that you do not do anything to lose this state. Return often for ziyarah and to renew the spiritual connection. Another suggestion from today's special is doing ziyarah from afar. Although physical presence is the best, it is not required. This attention can be done from anywhere and in any state and can be as simple as saying, Assalamu alayka, Ya Ali ibn Musa Reza.
Indeed, Al-Ma'mun al-Abbasi, he disliked Imam al-Ridha for many reasons. One of them, of course, is his knowledge. One day he brings all the heads of different religions, the master of the Christians, the master of the Jews, the master of the Zoroastrians. He brings them all. A man comes by the name of An-Nawfali to the Imam. And he tells him, Yabna Rasulillah, Al-Ma'mun is gathering all these individuals so that you debate with them. But I'm worried, Yabna Rasulillah. He said, are you worried about your imam? He said, I'm not worried about you. But these individuals, they don't accept anything for the truth. They keep on going around and around and around and around without accepting anything. So it is them the problem, not you. He smiled at him and he said, do you know when Ma'mun... Or he told him, he said, why do you think Ma'mun has done this? He said, Ya Ibn Rasulullah, maybe to test you, maybe to examine you. He said, no, this is beyond that. He said, but do you know when Al-Ma'mun will be regretful? He said, when? He said, when I start disputing and discussing with the Christians using their own Bible, and with the Jews using their own Torah, and with the Zoroastrians in their own language, he says, that's when Ma'mun will become regretful of what he has done.
Ali Musa Reza, Ali Musa Reza, Ali Musa Reza, Ya Ali Musa Reza, Ali Musa Reza, Ali Musa Reza, Ali Musa Reza, Ya Ali Musa Reza.
Inshallah, on the next episode of today's special, we'll learn more about ziyarah, especially Imam Reza's ziyarah. Thank you very much, and we'll leave you in Allah's blessings. Fi amanillah.
Every sound and every voice in every language ever heard, each drop of ink that has been used to write every single word, they could never portray everything I feel in my heart and wanna say. And it's hard to explain why I could never describe my love for you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.